Hello, everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing, the writing life, as well as video interviews with some of the best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org. And we are funded by the Great Pacific Northwest Writers Association, which has been supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. That's a long time, people, 60 years. They're awfully good at it. As you've probably heard me mention on this show, they put on the Pacific Northwest Writers Conference every year. It's a big one down here, up here, down here, over here in Seattle. I'll be teaching there, and let me say a bit about that conference, if I could. It's a great conference, and they, in addition to having something like 25 agents there and a dozen editors from New York and all across the country and covering all the genres, lots of classes on craft and marketing and the business side of writing, as well as the sort of emotional challenges of writing. They also offer master classes, and these are a great deal because you can go. These are on Thursday. It's a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday writers conference. Master classes are on Thursday, and if you want to sign up for those, you can, in addition to the rest of the conference. But if you don't want to go to the whole conference, you just want a little mini conference experience, you can sign up for just the master classes at a significantly reduced price. I'll be teaching a short, by my standards, three-hour Fearless Writing master class, and you can go to just that if you want for the low, low price of $50 I just learned. What a deal, I will tell you. But Peter Vogler is going to be teaching Mr. Hero's Journey. He's going to be doing a master class. Cece Humphreys is going to be doing another master class on, I think, structuring your novel. And then on Sunday, Donald Moss is going to be doing his Writing the Breakout novel class, big four-hour thing. So, wow, we got just an all-star teaching faculty for this conference. I highly recommend you check it out. Go to pnwa.org. Speaking of teaching, today's guest, Peter Gibb, has dedicated his life to two principles, both of which I am personally very interested in. The first is creativity. The second is what has come to be known as mindfulness, being present in the moment. And he has learned, as have I got to say, that these two principles come together in the teaching and coaching of memoir. Memoir, yes, indeed, they do. Writing and creativity and mindfulness all come together. And so I'm going to talk to him today about memoir writing, mindfulness, and his new memoir, King of Doubt. King of Doubt. Peter, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Bill. Nice to be here.
Well, it's good to have you. It's good to have you. King of Doubt came out in February. February? Yes?
February. Yep.
Yeah.
Early February.
So now, Peter, you've been out and about in the world. You spent all these years, a couple years anyway, maybe more, working on this book all alone.
Three and a half,
away.
To be precise.
Three and a half. That
well, actually,
about
70 years, to be precise.
Yeah, well, I
but
know.
Most of it was living it, and then three and a half writing it.
Right, right. So you sat down. And this is, I should say, as memoirs go, this one actually covers a good most of your life. It's not true of all the memoirs, but this one does. And so, but 3.5 years, you, the blank page, your words, your story. But now you're traveling around, talking to people, getting a little response from the reading world. How has that been for you?
It's been great. I think like a lot of authors, I wasn't sure if it would be great, if it's really what I wanted to do or, you know, what it would be like. Like a lot of authors, I'm more of an introvert, and putting myself out there, you know, is not the easiest thing to do. But I've had a blast, Bill. I have really enjoyed it, and I think one of the reasons that I have so enjoyed it is the book, in a lot of ways, is about things that I did not want to reveal. And suddenly, once you write a book about it, okay, it's all over, you know. If you don't want to reveal it, you shouldn't have written the book. And so now I'm out there revealing it, and I find it is so incredibly liberating. And I'm finding I'm also getting a really good response. How so deliberating? Well,
yeah, I mean,
I can
easily imagine, but teach our readers, our listeners who may not have had that experience, why it can be so liberating to go ahead and share these things that you thought were your dark, private, maybe shameful even secrets.
Exactly. Very shameful. And I mean, for me, for decades of my life, the worst thing that could possibly have happened to me was that somebody would really see inside me and understand the self-doubt that I was experiencing. I mean, that would be catastrophic. You know, I will do anything to prevent that. And now suddenly here I am up there talking about it. And I find that not only is it I don't need to be ashamed about it, and people don't run away from me. People actually are drawn to me because they relate to it. They say, you know, I felt some of that too. And so it draws us closer. It's exciting. It feels real. It feels authentic. And I feel freer, I think, than I've ever felt in my life, and partly as a result of writing this book and then putting it out there and saying, this is me, and I hope you like it, but if you don't, you don't. You know, this is who I am, and this is what I stand for.
Well,
so
it doesn't surprise me, because
liberating.
Doubt, self-doubt, is, I think, one of the so universal. And I think that, you know, it's funny. I was interviewing, I've interviewed him a couple times, but do you know who André Debuse is, the novelist?
Yes.
Are you familiar with
yes,
him?
Yes, I do.
He wrote House of Sand and Fall. He wrote Townie, too. And, in fact, after reading Townie, I read Townie. It was his memoir, and I really liked it a lot, and I wanted to talk to him about it. I was going to interview him again, and I'd gone to meet him at his hotel. And I didn't want to pour on the praise. It gets kind of sticky and kind of icky, but I really did like, and it meant a lot to me personally reading the book. And I said, André, you know, I want to tell you about this. I said, but I don't want to make too big a deal out of it, you know. And he said, no. He said, go ahead. He didn't make a big deal out of it. He said, I'm an insecure writer like everybody else. But this is a guy who had been nominated for the National Book Award, had been on Oprah a few times, had, you know, sold millions of copies of his book, but insecure. And it strikes me anyway. So I mention that because I think it's very easy to underestimate how much doubt everyone is living with. They may not show it.
Yeah, sure.
But I think you're tapping into something that is very universal. Very universal.
I think it's totally.
And I'm sure you're getting
that
back from people.
I am. I mean, it's really strange. Actually, the first interview that I did after the book was published, did an NPR interview, and the interviewer said at the very end of it, you know, this is a classic book about imposter syndrome. And it was right at the end of the interview, and there wasn't time to follow up on it. But the truth between you and me is I didn't know what imposter syndrome was. And then very soon thereafter, I had a number of readers come up to me and say exactly the same thing. So I thought, well, I better look this up and find out what it is, because I did not intend to write about imposter syndrome, but it seems like a lot of people saying this is what I did write about. And I found that it is this syndrome that a lot of people, and particularly I think creative people, talented people, have this huge doubt, and they think that whatever success they achieve is because it was luck. Or I'm a fake, you know, basically I'm a fake. And you're going to find, you don't know it now, but in 1 minute or 10 minutes or an hour, you're going to find out. And oh, my God, I'm going to be discovered. And then it's all over.
Yeah.
And we live with this. You know, a lot of us live with this. I mean, some to extremes and some less extremes. But I think all of us tap into that at some point or another. Maybe it's buried back in our reptilian brain somewhere. And you know, it's there. And
when I interviewed Armistead Maupin, he's the guy who wrote Tales of the City, and he's, you know, he was writing an installation of his story a day in the San Francisco Examiner, I think it was. So he was just writing at a breakneck pace back in the 70s and 80s when he really came, you know, to his own. And so I interviewed him a few years back. Sweet guy. And we got to talking about fear. I said, you know, kind of what's your biggest fear? And he said that everyone's going to figure me out. Everyone's going to learn the truth about me. And I said, well, what's that? He said that I'm just making it all up. I said, what do you mean?
Yeah.
Of course you're making up. But somehow that's all he was doing. That it was such a small, simple thing. He was just making all this stuff up. And so he too, Peter, was living with that sense that he was a kind of imposter, because he just was sitting down and just diddling around, and people were amused by it. I think it's so common. It's so common.
Yeah, it is. And somehow, I think as little children, we grow up thinking, aha, well, they've got, the big people have got the answer. You know, when I get there, I'll know too or something. And we think we should have the answer. We should have it all figured out. Nobody has it all figured out. You know, none of it. I don't care who you are. I mean, like imposter syndrome, people are like Tom Hanks and the most successful people. It doesn't matter how successful you are. It's still there. When you open up the blank page again, it's still as blank as it was, yesterday.
But that dovetails into your other love, your other passion, which is mindfulness. And it seems to me mindfulness is an attempt to, I would say, if there is an answer, quote unquote, it lies within the practice of mindfulness, which is not a point on the grid. Hmm. It's more of a balance one seeks, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say? Because to me, if there's an answer, quote unquote, it's that, but it's not a, there's not on the other side of an equal sign.
No, it's a mystery, I mean, it's a mystery how, and I think what mindfulness teaches, at least what it's taught me, or one of the things it's taught me, is just going with the moment, even if the moment is painful. I think we're so programmed or so eager to run away from the pain, and that, of course, just increases it. And what mindfulness teaches us, right now I'm really feeling doubtful, nervous, I don't know what to do, I don't know what to say, I don't know what to write, whatever it is. So, oh my God, I got to fill this up with something. But mindfulness teaches us, if that's what you're feeling, just be with that for a moment. And lo and behold, what happens is it being with it transforms it. It's totally paradoxical, but it is, I'm just convinced of it, that it is one of the best ways to deal with that doubt.
Well, you know what it is, because pain is resistance. Both our kids were home births, and we used a midwife, and so she talked to my wife about the pain of childbirth, and a lot of it comes through the in the contractions. And what she explained to my wife, and I never heard this, she said most of the pain during that period of the labor comes from the mother resisting the contraction. In other words, the body is doing this thing that she didn't tell it to do. The woman freaks out, as anyone kind of would, and resists it. And the muscles are so powerful. And I think that – and so the pain comes from her resisting it. My wife did this sort of hypnotic thing where she was able to not resist it and didn't go through a lot of pain, especially in the second birth. But I think about that with our creative process. It's the resisting of what's happening where I think the pain comes, less than what's actually happening. Thinking this shouldn't be when it is. Think about
it. This shouldn't be, and I don't want it to be. And
I don't want it to be. I should know.
I'm not good enough because I'm going through this, and it's not what I'm supposed to be doing. So, oh my God, I've got to hide it. And above all, I can't let you or a reader or whomever know about it. I've got to keep it secret. And it doesn't work. It's like you say. It's those muscles are too powerful. You can't control them. All you got to do
can't.
Is let them go and quit fighting it. But easier said than done, for sure.
When
we're sitting back here having a lovely conversation, but in the moment, it's very, very hard to do. But that's what's worth practicing, I think. I know.
Well, it is, because every time you are able to let go the doubt, let go the judgment, let go the worry about what other people are thinking, to me, it's like the difference between holding your breath and breathing. It's that instant. That's my experience
of it. I think that's a great analogy. And in one way, it's so obvious, but in another way, it takes a huge amount of trust to do that. Let go.
Yeah.
Just let it happen. What do you mean? I can't do that. I mean, it just is contrary to everything we've been taught. You gotta struggle with this. You gotta try. You gotta work harder. Bear down. Think about this. All of those messages come crashing in. Oh yeah, this is important. It's not important. I just gotta let it be. Something very different starts to happen, but it is so counterintuitive, I think.
But you know, it's interesting to me as to why I think creativity and mindfulness work together, because when I'm writing, and if you've listened to this show, you've heard me talk about this, but I'm going to talk about it again, which is the right word, quote unquote, for the story you're telling, or the right story, or the right sentence, the right character, the right perspective is always the effortless one. In other words, the only way you know if you found the right way for a story is it's the effortless path. It's the wrong way if you're forcing it. And so in writing, I have to teach my students this, you're actually seeking effortlessness. That's how you know you're headed in the right direction. That's how you know you're in the right lane, is by the effortlessness.
It's
tricky just from what you just said, Peter. Which is that we're used to bearing down.
In terms, it's like try to be effortless. You know,
right.
I mean, it doesn't make any sense. But it makes all kinds of sense at the same time. You know,
it does.
It seems.
You know, as I was reading this book, I thought to myself, you write very articulately and very openly and very honestly about your desire for, many of us go through this for sure, but other people's approval. Wanting other people to like you, right? Very human thing. God knows I went through that. But a challenging perspective to have, a challenging need to have as a writer and an artist, because I have found for myself that I can't need anyone to like me if I'm going to write the thing I want to write. I really have to forget about, in fact, I just wrote a whole book about how you have to forget what other people might think of your work to do it. And so as someone who is obviously by this time you've dealt with it much more than when you were a young kid and so on. This book is a journey of coming to that understanding. But still, writing this book must have brought that challenge into the forefront once again.
Well, it totally did. And I think I went through many iterations of, you know, worrying about, are you going to like the book? Are you going to like me? What do you think about, and you know all that, and then letting go of it, and then it comes back, and then letting go of it, but I think ultimately, I mean, I tell some stories in the book that I'm not proud of, to tell you the truth, and writing them was hard because I think, oh my God, they're gonna know this about me. These are things that I kept secret for decades, and now I'm putting it out there, but. Again, it's when I wrote it, it felt. I felt that, you know, the cover-up game is over. It's too late for that. I'm going to write this book. I'm going to tell the story. I'm going to tell it as honestly as I possibly can, and you're going to decide whatever you're going to decide with it. But if I don't put it out there in as authentic a way as I can, I'm wasting my time writing the book. I mean, really, do something that's more worthwhile. So actually, that's kind of what I went through, I think, with that, and I so far I don't know how many people have read the book, but I've had a lot of people come to my events, and I've never felt an iota of criticism from anybody about you're a bad person because you did this or did that. The things that I've been fearful of for so long, they're a joke.
They really
don't exist except in my own mind. That's where they exist, in my own mind. I make them up. You know, we all make up our stories, and that's a huge one that I made up, and it's real, but it's not true.
Memoir is so much about changing. I've come to think of fear as a story about the future, and our sense of inadequacy as a story about the past, and memoir. I find when I teach it and when I write it, it's all about changing the story of our inadequacy. It's just a story. Because in the present moment, you're never inadequate. You're never inadequate in the present moment. But in the past, that's where all your sin resides, right?
Right. It really is. And I think that's one of the great gifts of memoir is that it can help you own and claim the past and get beyond the shame of that, you know. And I always say that memoir helps you claim the past, and mindfulness helps you live in the present. And if you got those two, you're going to do okay. You know, it's just going to turn out okay. Don't worry about it.
And the funny thing is, you're not even the past. The fact is, and you know this, if you've written, once you start writing about the past, you realize you don't know anything about the past. Really, it's almost all made up in a lot of ways. It's not that you're inventing characters or people or events, but you know, I've said that there are certain experiences I had with my son, for instance, where he said certain things to me at certain times, and I wrote about them as best I could remember, where he said specific, very specific things to me. But if someone were to show me a film of those moments and he didn't say those things, in fact, I wouldn't be surprised, because I know how the mind works, that to some degree it's invention, because memory is still an act of imagination in that we're not currently living it. You know what I mean?
Sure.
It's all made up to some degree.
It's all made up because it's your it seems like memoir is your subjective view of the past, and it should be your subjective view of the past.
Yeah, deeply subjective.
And that's only one person has that view, and that's you, the writer. You know.
That's right.
If I was there sitting in the room at the same time, I would have seen it differently. But it is, and it should be how you, at that whatever age you were, whatever was going on for you, how you viewed that moment. What was the meaning of that moment for you? And why is that still important for you? Why do you want to write about it? What's up? But that's only you're the only person that really has that view. Your son or whomever else inevitably has a different view of it.
That's a good point. I hope my listeners heard what he said. Why do you want to write about it? It's an important question. Why are you telling this story other than to have people listen to you? You know, you can't be telling the story just because you want your turn, right? Why are you telling – what is it about that experience that makes it worth telling? And that, if you can answer that question in some way, that'll teach you what part of it to focus on. Why are you telling it?
Yeah, that'll direct you exactly. I always, in my classes, I teach this class on memoir and mindfulness, and I have people start out with just think of anything, whatever scene from the past has some juice for you. Don't worry about exactly the details, you know, but just something that's still alive for you for whatever reason, and let's jump into it and start writing and see where it goes. And I think that, to me, that's a great place to start, because even if you don't understand it, it's still, that story is alive for you. So it still has something to teach you, something you're still working on, something you don't understand. And if you can jump into that, that's what leads you down the path of discovery, I think.
Yeah.
And I was a very reluctant memoirist. I really didn't want to write a memoir. My daughter was the one who kept that after me at it. And eventually I said, okay, I'm just going to write one scene. And then, you know, that's it. But I wrote the one scene, actually, the scene that starts the book, a race that I ran when I was 5 years old and living and going to school in Scotland. And I learned so much about myself from writing that scene. And it was stuff that even though I'd explored it in various different ways and, you know, therapy and whatever over the years, I learned more about it when I started to write it and really started to put it down on paper. And I began to realize what that scene meant to me. It's just a fabulous tool for discovering.
It really is. I teach memoir writing, too. I teach it as a memoir class for people who theoretically might want to finish their memoirs and publish them and so on. But I always think, man, I could do this as just a therapy class if I wanted to. It almost is anyway, because it so asks you to forgive people, to forgive yourself, perhaps most of all, and not to judge anything. You know, you can't really write a moment if you judge it. You have to just let it exist. It's not, and people, I think, I know for myself, I'm used to judging. I think I've done it I uncover in the writing about my past how I have been judging certain people and events, and the writing requires me to drop that and see what is there in that moment without judgment, you know. But I've taken the judgment for granted prior to rewriting it, if that makes sense.
It becomes so automatic that I think we just do it. But yeah, if you can just kind of let go of that and just write the story and see where it takes you. One of the things I teach in my class is kind of watching the movie before you even start writing. Just watch the movie and sit back. Don't direct the movie, but just watch it. Let it unfold.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Happens. And it's a great one. It's amazing what
happens. So before you sit down and start writing the scene or whatever it is, And by the way, scene is very important. Just for you listeners writing memoir, make it scene if you can, not just have a beginning, middle, and end of some kind, not just a reminiscence. But what you're saying is first watch it as a movie.
Yeah.
In your mind.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
that.
That's good.
Watch it
that's
as a movie and just sit back and watch it. Don't direct it. Don't act it out. Don't just close your eyes and let it happen. Let it rip. As if you're sitting in the theater and, you know, I don't quite know what this movie is going to be about, but here I am. So let me see. Let me enjoy it. And see where it goes. And it's amazing what you notice that you didn't notice before. And
so this
how
is before
that
you write
helps
a word.
You, I think.
Before
you write
a
word, absolutely. Just watch it. Let it be.
I'm going to steal that one.
Steal that
I
one.
It's
a very anybody it's listening, please steal it. It's a very powerful technique because it takes you out of the stress of being the writer or the director or the actor or the whatever. And you got to perform because now you're directing this thing. And it lets you just simply watch it, observe it, and let it unfold. I mean, still, you're creating it because it's coming out of your mind, but you're creating it from a very different place.
Yeah, no, it's true. Oh, that's good. It's good, you future memoirs. Listen to it. It's good advice. It's a good way to just, because that's what you kind of, ultimately, you want the reader to have that experience of it.
Exactly, yes. Yeah, and that's another thing, though. It helps you, it puts you in thinking in terms of scene. You know, because if you're watching a movie, you know, it has to play out in the scene. That's what movies are. And so I think so many beginning memoirs really don't understand what a scene is. They're really not able to do
they
that.
Don't.
And they get into reporting what happened. Well, first this happened and then that happened and whatever.
Yeah.
And so watching it as a movie, you just got to – you see, well, here she comes, there he goes, whatever is that happening on the screen. And you perceive it from that point of view. And I think that helps you then – look at it and as a scene rather than a report about whatever it is that you want to say.
That is awesome. I hope I remember it the next time I'm teaching a class. I really like that. Well, thank you, Peter. That was awesome. Look at this. We're almost out of time, but we're not quite out of time. We're not quite because I got another question for you.
All right.
If you've listened to the show, you know it's coming. So I want you to finish this sentence for me. If writing has taught me anything, it's taught me what?
Everything. You know the book, Everything I Learned About Life, I Learned in Kindergarten or in Writing, it should say.
Yeah, I know, you and me.
I mean, it's just, it's so, writing, as you point out, is life. So what's it taught me? Well, I think it has taught me the power of living in the moment and just tuning into my own heart and letting it be and having faith that it'll take me somehow, maybe not immediately, but it'll take me to the right place. I've learned that over and over and over again from my writing.
Writing's
and
great
it's,
practice
it's,
for that, isn't it? You just
it
keep
is.
Practicing.
It really
practicing
is. And there's
practicing.
No more important lesson in life, I don't think. That. So I'm eternally grateful to my writing.
Yeah.
For keeping, I mean, I'll learn it again another, 10, 20 times in the next few months. And every time I get reminded of it, it's still a powerful and important lesson. And
absolutely.
I hope I never, never walk away from it. It's a great question.
Good lesson. The book is King of Doubt, obviously available on Amazon. What is the best place for them, for folks to buy? Would you rather have them buy it on Amazon or go down to their local bookstore and say, give me King of Doubt, will you? Which would you prefer?
Well, probably Amazon is the easiest place to buy it because some bookstores are carrying it, some bookstores are not carrying it.
Yeah.
Some carry it by it's available to any bookstore if they choose to special order it. Amazon is probably the easiest place to buy it.
Okay.
I'd like to,
King of Doubt,
to promote the local
King of
bookstore.
Doubt, and your website, just to, we've got it there on the we've got it in our up here now, but people listening to this in iTunes or whatever. What's the website?
The website is you don't need the W's anymore, but it's petergibb.org. So please come visit me. I've got some fun videos on there, got a lot about the book. Petergibb.org.
Great. Peter, thank you so much for coming on the show. Best of luck with the book.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you so much for having me. Best of luck with your upcoming book, which I know is going to be terrific. Looking forward to reading that one. And it's great to chat with a fearless writer and a fearless liver.
Oh, it is, isn't it, Peter? Okay, well, thank you so much.
Isn't it,
it was a pleasure to talk to you.
All right. Likewise, Bill.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
You bet. Trust your heart, people. Peter's right. Writing is a practice of trusting your heart and just seeing where it's going to go. You may have heard those words before, but it's true. That's what writing is. Okay, I'm going to be back next week with Joan Frank, the lovely Joan Frank. We're going to talk about her latest book, All the News, I believe it's the name of it. Until then, go out there and do something you love. Couldn't hurt.